Thank you. Yeah, so let me start by thanking the organizers. It's been a wonderful week, and also the program has been wonderful. So I will talk about some work that I've done in collaboration with Marco Cateroli, Murat Günaydın, and Ryder Roiban the last two or three years. And then also I will talk, actually a large part of the talk will be ongoing work with Josh Noli. So let me start by just showing you some details of what if you would just follow textbook calculation of perturbative gravity, you would start from some Einstein-Hilbert Lagrangian, you would expand around the flat space, and you would work out the Feynman rules. Here I use a particular gauge, the Donner gauge. The propagator is not that bad, only three terms, but the cubic vertex has a lot of terms, and in fact this notation hides, there's on the order of 100 terms. So it's a very complicated beast compared to, say, gauge theory. And it gets worse, of course, because we have a higher order interactions and so on, and it never ends. But it's really not the higher order interactions. It's already the cubic diagrams coming from this vertex, which are a huge problem. So, for example, if you decide to calculate the four-point amplitude using this Feynman rules, you're faced with 10 to the 4 terms, which is basically 100 squared each vertex. Here you have 100 times 100 times 100 times 3 times 3, that's 10 to the 7, and here you get 10 to the 21 terms, roughly. So it's a very complicated problem, and it looks very messy, and it sort of obscures much of the beauty that we know is there in Einstein gravity. And in fact, in order to see this beauty, the first step is actually to look at on-shell processes. So for example, just looking at the free theory, just looking at the graviton plane wave in the weak field limit, you can already see that there's some very nice structure. You have the ordinary plane wave factor, and then it factorized into two polarization vectors of a gauge theory. And you can see that this makes it, for example, this makes it symmetric, it makes it traceless, given that these are null vectors. It also makes it transverse, given that these are transverse vectors. And this goes on when you look at the interactions. So for the three-point amplitude or three-point vertex, you can actually on-shell show that it's a product of two Young-Mills vertices. And it's no accident of 3 points, it goes on. So if you look at 4 points, you get, for example, this formula, and show that it factorizes in terms of two gauge theory amplitudes. And that's sort of the general structure. So this is by now well established for the at least at tree level and also at loop level, that gravity processes typically are squares of gauge theory ones. So what I'm going to write this as gauge gravity is a product of one gauge theory times another gauge theory. And just to show you some examples, here are some examples of what you can do. Some very familiar theories can be written in this way. So for example, n equals 8 supergravity, the maximally supersymmetric one, can be written as a product of two n equals 4 Young-Mills series. You can also start reducing the supersymmetry. For example, if I remove all the supersymmetry on one side, I get n equals 4 supergravity. You can also keep on reducing. It gets slightly more complicated, but here's an example where you have pure Young-Mills on both sides. You get essentially Einstein gravity, but you also get a dilaton and a BMU field, only four dimension, that's an axion. So you get some extra states. And it's not just for the pure gauge theories, you can also have matter coupled gauge theories, so QCD, and by QCD I mean Young-Mills plus some quarks in the fundamental. This can be massive, and it turns out that if you do this double copy in the right way, you actually turn out to get gravity coupled to matter. If this matter is photons, then you get Maxwell-Einstein series. And you can keep on, you can actually make it non-abelian as well. You have to do a slightly different construction, which is you have to have a pure Young-Mills here, and you have to have Young-Mills coupled to phi cubed. Yeah, that's going to be in there. Well, you can get rid of it, or that's the conjecture. And I'm not really going to talk about it here, but since you asked, I can answer it. So the trick is that you actually make this, so the matter that actually comes from the the quark times a quark, you can make it a ghost. And that's possible if you have only one quark. And then you can make that cancel out the BB nu and the phi. We show that this is possible in four dimensions. What is possible in higher dimension, I don't know. But at least in four dimensions, this seems possible. Okay. Okay, so, and the reason why this works so nicely for so many different examples is really that you can argue that what this construction is doing is that it's lifting the gauge symmetry on the both sides to a diffeomorphic symmetry. And I will explain that a bit more in detail. Of course, those of you who been in the game for a long time know that this is no surprise. I mean, from the point of view of string theory, this is all very natural. String theory also have this structure, and this is in fact how we were first discovered. So Quailevel and Atai in 86 noticed that you can actually factorize the closed string in terms, well, the closed string in terms of two open strings, and that could be worked out at tree level to all multiplicity. And in the alpha prime goes to zero limit, that becomes a gravity theory product of a gauge theory and a gauge theory. And here's some relations just to demonstrate how it works like. We already seen this earlier in this workshop and program, so I'm not going to go over it very much. But this story is old. It's more than 30 years old. And recently, in the last 10 years or so, there's been a lot of progress understanding on a deeper level, at least in the field theory point of view, a deeper structure. So let me just say some what are the new things that we have learned, and this has to do with the generality of the double copy. So we have learned actually that you can take not only trees and goes and for the gauge theory and go to trees in the gravity theory, but you can also do loops. We've seen similar things earlier in this talk, so I'm kind of going quickly here. But basically, one generalization which was done in 2010 was to actually realize that this works very nicely at loop level. But since then, there's been a number of even more recent generalizations. So this construction works for theories that are not truncations of N-equals-8 supergravity. And that's interesting because this sort of indicate that they somehow sits maybe outside of string theory, because naturally you get N=8 supergravity in the alpha prime goes to zero limit. Also, you can double copy theories with fundamental matter, which was the QCD example on the previous slide. You can do spontaneously broken series, even form factors, which is very strange that it works, but it does work. There was recently a calculation of a five-loop form factor using this method. So gravity off-shell symmetries can also be shown to be inherited from Young-Mills. And here I don't mean the diffeomorphic symmetry, but more global symmetries. Also recently there's been work in classical double copy solutions, basically black holes, writing them as some solutions of the gauge theory. And this also is interesting in the context of gravitational waves. As we heard several talks already, there's been a very fascinating story related to how to rewrite string theory amplitude in new ways, new double copies, which are more like field theory double copies, even though they involve string theory objects. And then, of course, CHY scattering equations, which give explicit formulas for many of these different amplitudes, and they sort of realize explicitly certain properties that like a double copy structure is sort of manifest in this formulation. And today in this talk I will also discuss conformal gravity, so I will come to that later on. And you might wonder why are we interested in this? It's not just because we're interested in the theories themselves, but we're actually interested in calculating in a series. And that goes back to my first slide showing it's so complicated to calculate in a series, but using this double copy is much simpler, and that actually lets us, you know, do various calculations of UV behavior in supergravities. And I won't go through this slide because Sui is going to talk after me, so you should see Sui's talk. So here's the outline. I will explain a little bit more on this relation between diffeomorphic symmetry and gauge symmetry. I would say something more on color kinematics duality. This will be a review. I would say something about the Maxwell and Jagminus-Einstein. But then I will come to the conformal gravity case, and I will have to introduce a new gauge theory, well, I think it's new, which is dimension six operators. And then I will consider some deformation of that. So let's say something about the diffeomorphism story first. So let's consider that we have a gauge theory amplitude. Let's just start from the gauge theory point of view. And we write the tree-level amplitude as a sum over cubic Feynman diagrams, as we have seen earlier in the various talks. We have some numerator, we have some color factors and denominators. Let's isolate the polarization vector in the numerator. And then let's consider a gauge transformation on this leg. So we shift epsilon by some parameter alpha times the momenta of the leg. What will happen is that the numerator will shift by some delta. This delta will not be zero in general, because we know that individual Feynman diagrams are not gauge invariant. So this delta is non-zero and is explicitly in this form. However, we know that this is a gauge theory amplitude, so it has to be gauge invariant, right? So you can see that if there is some delta that pollutes this amplitude, it has to cancel out somehow. And it can only be if these coefficients here are actually not independent coefficients. These color factors are linearly dependent, and we know that they are, of course, linearly dependent. That's the Jacobian entity or the Lie algebra structure of the color factors. So we have such an identity, and thus this combination, where when you plug in this and you have a delta here, this has to vanish just by definition, just by construction that this is a gauge theory amplitude. This has to be zero. So far, there's no assumptions here. But now let's assume that we can also find kinematic numerators involving polarization vectors, momenta, and anything else that actually behaves in a similar way as the color factor. So whenever the color factor satisfy a Jacobian entity, there's a corresponding kinematic Jacobian entity here. And this is a very non-trivial assumption, but it's been demonstrated and even proven at tree level that you can do it, but even demonstrated at loop level that it can be done in many non-trivial examples. So this is a non-trivial assumption, but there's a lot of evidence for it. So then this double copy that you can just do by replacing one scalar factor by a numerator, what's the properties of this double copy? Well, it has to describe a spin 2 theory, because now we have polarization vectors on the left-hand side and the right-hand side. So we have a polarization tensor. It also is automatically invariant under a linear diffeomorphism of this type. And it's easy to see that because you just plug in this, and what you get is that you get the same delta as you had before, and you have a delta tilde, which is just basically the right-hand side. It has the same properties as a delta. And you notice that this object here is basically the same object as on the previous slide, except that we have a color factor here. But given that color and kinematics obey the same Lie algebraic relation, the same Jacobian entities, this is also zero by the same mechanism. So this term is just zero, and therefore this is invariant on a linearized diffeomorphism. And this argument is very general. At no point here did I say which theory I talked about. I didn't say anything about supersymmetry. I didn't say anything about which dimension I'm in. I just said that I had some gauge theory, I had some color factors, I had some denominators, but actually denominators are not too important in this story. So everything is very general. And as we know, there's actually very interesting double copy structures even in string theory. And you can sort of argue that, well, maybe this story should also go through even if this denominator is not just ordinary Feynman propagators. Also, I didn't say anything about masses, so this should also hold when you have masses. But what's very important is that this is true, and that's the non-trivial piece of this story, this equation, that you have this kinematic Jacobian relations. So this is what we call color kinematics duality. So it's the same equation as before. Now I just written out the propagators. But given that we write our gauge theory amplitude in this form, we have to demand that for every color identity, like this commutation relation, there has to be a corresponding numerator identity. Likewise, if you have a joint diagrams, then you have this Jacobian entity, you have to have a corresponding numerator entity. And in some sense, this call effector and numerator are dual to each other, or caller and kinematics is dual to each other. And basically what this statement means is that whenever you have a formula which is written in terms of the C, maybe you have used some non-trivial identities of the Lie algebra to arrive at that formula. But once you have arrived at the formula, you can actually replace the call effector by the numerator. And in that way, you can actually recycle many non-trivial formulas which are in the literature, if they're written in this call in terms of these call effectors, which are the FABCs or the generators and so on. And I should say, this sort of hints that there is a kinematic Lie algebra underlying these numerators, and nobody really knows what it is. However, in some very in two particular examples, is actually known, and this is self-dual Yang-Mills, which was explained by Ricardo and collaborators. So I don't have any slides on that, but if you have questions, just ask Ricardo. And recently, there's been another kinematic algebra found by Xiao Shen and Clifford Chung in the nonlinear sigma model. So that's the two examples where we actually know more or less what it is. Okay, so let me say something about gauge invariant relations. You already seen it earlier, but it's important for the later part of this talk, so let me say something. So obviously, if we compute amplitudes which are proportional to the trace factor, so-called color order amplitudes, they will have a cyclicity property from the trace. But there turns out to be relations due to the Lie algebra structure of gauge theory amplitudes. For example, the fact that photons have to decouple, they cannot couple to gluons. So there's various other identities, and all of them together form makes it possible to actually eliminate certain amplitudes, and you get to an n-2 factorial basis. So this is all known since the 80s. But recently, there was this additional relation found, and this relation is more non-trivial and involves some kinematical factor, and it really comes from this color kinematics duality. And this actually is a consequence of the denominator algebra, the kinematic algebra. So you can also, once you have this relation, you can say that the theory obeys color kinematics duality at least at tree level, if these are tree level amplitudes. This relation only holds tree level. Actually, we saw generalization of these relations in the talk by Stefan earlier this week at loop level. But this is tree level relations. So let me say that again just to be clear. So if you have a gauge theory and it satisfies these relations, then you know that you can actually feed it in through in a double copy formula. For example, take the KLT formula at tree level, and you get something which is gauge invariant, and it has the right pole structure and the right crossing symmetry and so on. So this relation was not proven by us, but it was proven by various people, and it's actually, this relation is automatic from the point of view of CHY. It encodes the same information as scattering equations, given that it has the same basis n-3 factorial. And then, okay, so the double copy, I assume you've already seen it, so let me just say some features of it. So the two numerators here, so one of them I call tilde, because they can differ by what we call a generalized gauge transformation. They don't have to be in the same gauge. But and this actually means that one is sufficient if one copy of this numerator satisfies this kinematic algebra. Also, the numerators can differ by the external states, and that's actually how you get dilaton or, this is how you get the B-mu-nu tensor or the axion, or this is how you get matter amplitudes. But the most interesting case is when the two numerators belong to two different series, and that gives a host of different gravitational series, some of them which I showed before. And I said this is equivalent to KLT if you're at tree level, and if you're in the adjoint representation. However, if you're looking at states which are not in the adjoint, if you're looking at loop level amplitudes, then this is a generalization. I have two slides where I show some examples of the series. I'm not going to go through them, but I just want to show them that there's a huge number of examples, and I don't think I even have all the examples here. So these are various gauge theories which obey color kinematics duality in various different ways. And as such, you can actually double copy them and get different gravitational series. In some cases, it's not even a gravity theory, as we learned from the CHY point of view. There's many theories which has this property, even though they're not gauge theories. And here's a similar slide where I just display various different gravitational theories, which also can be obtained as a double copy. And I'm not going to go through them. Let me just say some words on this ones here that I marked in blue, so the medical supergravity and homogeneous supergravity, or Sip-Young-Mills coupled to supergravity, and then I will get to conformal gravity. So let's say something about the magical case. So in a recent work, we looked at what's known as magical and homogeneous supergravities. These are n equals 2 supergravities, which has this Lagrangian, if I only look at the bosonic fields. These are Maxwell-Einstein series. These theories are very simple because they're actually entirely determined by this constant tensor, which features in this basically interaction between three fields. And this can there's basically no constraint on this tensor other than this being symmetric. And that gives a host of families of different theories. This objects here are basically functions of the scalar field, but they are also determined by the Cijk. It turns out that if you pick particular Cijks, if you pick Cijks which are essentially gamma matrices in some higher dimension, then what you get is what's known as the homogeneous scalar manifold supergravities. And this was shown in the 90s by de Witt and van Brooijen. And it's essentially a two-parameter family of them. And it turns out that we can actually case by case, or, well, I should say, one formula actually gives all of these different cases. And the double copy is essentially that we take n equals 2 super QCD, by which I mean n equals 2 super Young-Mills plus massless quarks, one massless quark, or, quark and an antiquark. And then you double copy that with a d-dimensional QCD theory, which has NF fermions or quarks. And then depending on the parameter D and N, you can fill out this two-dimensional table here. So you can go up in dimension and you can go up in the number of fermions, or a number of quarks. And it turns out that, if, for example, if you stay in four dimension and you fill out this line here, you get what's known as the Luciani model supergravities. If you go in five dimension, you get what's called generic non-Jordan family. In six dimension, you get what's called generic Jordan family. These are weird names, but these are well known in the supergravity literature. And you also get the same family on this line, so there's two ways to realize it. So all these colored ones are actually what's known as symmetric supergravities, meaning that the scalar manifold is a symmetric space. And all these whites here are non-symmetric but homogeneous supergravities, and all of them would get. And there's four particularly interesting supergravities known as magical supergravities. And they're obtained by taking n equals 2 super QCD times d equals 7, 8, 10, and 14 dimensional QCD, having one quark only. So they're the violet ones here, or the blue ones. And there's one particularly interesting thing about the last one, because the last one actually lives in 14 dimensions. And it has actually quarks in it. So it's actually, you cannot realize it in a simple way from string theory. You cannot get it from the supersymmetric string because it's too high dimension. You cannot get it from the bosonic string because it has quarks in it. So that's actually a well-known example that this theory, the octonionic supergravity, medical supergravity, is actually not known how to obtain it from string theory. But in this formulation, we do get it. And I should also say that the fact that QCD, meaning Young-Mills plus massive quarks in a fundamental or base color kinematics, was actually shown in a paper 2 years ago. So we already know that this series obeys the needed relations to do a double copy.
There are all sorts of things you get from a double copy that you don't get from string
theory. Yes. Yes. I think that there's many different examples. I think this is maybe, to me, this is the most clearest one because it's just, it's simply, I mean, it's just different from what you would expect from superstring or from the bosonic string. The non-analytic model, yeah, I mean, there is some construction recently by Oliver and Jean Joseph and Mafra, right? But it's not a conventional construction, I guess.
Non-analytic
yeah.
Model is fine. The
Yeah, although I guess there should be the double copy of the non-analytic model, so there's some relation. Yeah. Okay. Good. Yeah. Okay. Good. Yeah. So there's an example of that, and that makes it interesting because it suggests that it's sort of more general. Also, so I said this are Maxwell series, Maxwell Einstein series. So you can also gauge them and get Yang-Mills Einstein series. We don't know how to gauge all of them, but we know how to gauge a particular one, which is realized as taking a Yang-Mills theory, which can be supersymmetric or not, and then taking a Yang-Mills theory coupled to a phi-cube theory. And we already heard this in a talk by Oliver the other day. So basically, the way you realize the graviton is the usual way by tensoring two gauge fields. And the gauge field itself is just a tensoring of the gauge field times a scalar, which doesn't change the spin of it. And so here's an example. So we did, for example, this calculation. So we did four gluons interacting, and there's a graviton exchange in the middle. And the way we do it is just having pure Yang-Mills here, which could be supersymmetric. And here we have a phi-cube scalar theory where we have a Yang-Mills exchange here. So this gives the construction of the simplest types of gauge supergravity. It doesn't give all of them. There's many interesting gauge supergravities that we don't yet know how to get, but the simplest one we get. Also, I should say that this construction actually extends naturally to the Coulomb branch. The details are very complicated, but at the end of the day, when the smoke's clear, it's sort of more or less obvious that it just works just by the fact that this construction works in any dimension, and then you can do some projections on the states, and you can get massive amplitudes. Okay, so that was that about those theories. So let me now say something about the conformal gravity. So last 15 minutes, I will say something about conformal gravity. So let me just say what's the motivation for looking at this theory. I mean, we know that this theory is not healthy. I mean, it's supposed to be non-unitary. Nonetheless, it's interesting to look at it. And the reason is that, well, if we claim that we can maybe get all gravity theories or double copies, well, then we should be able to get this one, right? So that was the initial motivation. So let me just say something about it. Well, as we know, it has a four derivative action. It's basically the Weyl tensor squared. And it's pinned down by being the theory that's invariant under local scale transformations. In order to look at the particular states in this theory, it's actually convenient to slightly deform the theory and introduce a mass, and then you go back to the massless case. So it has propagator 1 over k4, and this is problematic, because if you introduce a small mass in a theory, you can write this as a difference of two propagators, which means that this propagator here will always have the opposite sign to this one. So no matter how you twist and turn it, there will always be one state which has the wrong sign. And from this point of view, you can realize that, well, this theory has to contain two states from the massless propagator, that's a massless graviton. There's five states from the massive graviton. However, what happens is that when you go back to the massless case, you gain a symmetry due to the Weyl invariance. It never removes one state, so you have to remove one here. So you can decompose these six states into a graviton ghost, and a vector ghost. And amplitudes that I will consider are actually scattering of just ordinary gravitons, but inside any type of state can propagate. And as I said, there's negative norm states and making it non-unitary, which is a bad, very bad property. On the other hand, it has a very good property and is renormalizable, given that you include all the R squared operators. So there's some bad and some good things, but it's an interesting theory. There's been many papers working on this, looking at this theory for various reasons. And as we also look at conformal supergravity, so let me say something about that. So from my point of view, it's basically previous Lagrangian plus a lot of mess. So I'm not going to write that out. I think in many cases this mess is not even well known. So this is invariant on the local superconformal transformations. And in particular, the cases that I will look at is n equals 1, n equals 2, and n equals 4. I'm told that's also an n equals 3 version, but I'm not really sure if that's equivalent to n equals 4 or whether that's actually a different theory. But that one I'm not going to construct. So one can look at different states that shows up, so different supermultiplets. This is on shell. So this n equals 4 has 192 states, n equals 2 has 40, this one has 16, and it is split up into a graviton multiplet, a graviton ghost multiplet. Very unusually, there's also a gravitino ghost multiplet, which doesn't have a graviton in it, and then there's a vector ghost multiplet as well. And I should say there's a distinction between what's known as the minimal. If you look at the maximally supersymmetric one, there's a minimal n equals 4 conformal supergravity. And this has a well-known conformal anomaly shown by Fradkin and Seitlin. And then there's a non-minimal version, which I think is less well understood. However, this is the model which actually shows up in the twister string. And that's actually the model I'm looking at. I don't know how to get the minimal one. The claim is that if you actually look at the minimal one and you scatter the ordinary graviton, the claim is that the S matrix at three levels should be zero for that one. So that goes back to some, there's been some work on that. There was a paper by Malacena on this. So if this matrix is zero, then I cannot construct it this way. So that's, I'm going to look at the non-minimal one. So how do we obtain the conformal gravity as a double copy and the supersymmetric extensions? So there's some very problematic issues when you just think about it naively, because basically we want to write it on this form, which is how we write double copies, at 4 points. But it's just on line one, there's a problem, because in this way of writing it, they're simple poles, and we know that conformal gravity has double poles. So how can we actually generalize that? Well, the naive way to do it is maybe just to square these guys and then do the same trick over and over. But that's actually not the way to do it.
Are you talking an amplitude?
Yeah, this is an amplitude.
What are the external states?
As I said before, I'm going to scatter ordinary gravitons. I'm not going to scatter the ghost. So the ghosts are going to go on the inside of the three-level diagrams, but not on the external states. External states, I only scatter the ordinary massless gravitons.
The theory contains massless.
Yes. Yeah. I can deform this theory I can deform this theory by R, just ordinary Einstein-Hilbert term, and then I can take it has to multiply by mass parameter. I can take the mass to infinity, then the ghost will decouple. But I'm going to consider the case where I don't have R. I just have R squared, so only wild squared. And then it's a little bit subtle to say which state you're scattering. But I can see by deforming, I can see which state I'm scattering, actually. So one problem is the simple pole versus double poles. Also, there's many strange states. I mean, for example, the gravitino multiplet, which doesn't have any gravitons in it. And many ghosts and so on, and it's a non-unitary theory. I mean, ultimately, we might want to do some calculation, and we might want to use unitarity method, but it's a non-unitary, so how does that square? So for the most part, I'm going to ignore this issue. I'm actually going to resolve the first issue, but the third and second issue I'm not going to resolve here. But I'm just going to proceed very naively, and just going to do some dimensional analysis. And it turns out if you do a dimensional analysis, you will actually land on the right construction. So it's going to be a little messy here, but if you just go home and do the exercise yourself, it's very easy to reproduce. So the conformal gravity has four derivatives, which basically means that the amplitude will have four derivatives, just as Einstein gravity has two derivatives. So all amplitudes will have two derivatives, or two powers of momenta overall. That's the dimension of them, if I don't include any kappas or anything like that. And for example, I can realize that I can realize, for example, the four-point amplitude by making one numerator having two derivatives or two powers of momenta. That would be like Jang Mills. And then the other numerator, I realize by having four powers of momenta. And then you can see if I take two times four and I have to divide by one of these guys, I get four derivatives. So that works. So that looks like, okay, this looks like Jang Mills maybe, and this is some other theory. And then I can do this at m points at tree level. So the m points, in order to get this dimension, I make the first numerator have this dimension, m minus 2, which is basically the number of vertices. So this is basically like Jang Mills. And then it turns out for the other numerator, I need to have the derivative to the mth power, which is very nice. But it turns out that I cannot interpret that as having a given number of derivatives in a vertex. So I have to rewrite it in terms of m minus 2. And if I do that, this is the number of vertices, and this is the number of propagators which I have to divide. So it turns out that this numerator has to be non-local for this to make sense. And I can repeat the same analysis at loop level, just say that the first numerator has to be this form, this many external legs, this many loop legs, this many loops. And this is basically just how Jang Mills behaves. And then I have to rewrite the other numerator, and again, it's just going to be m powers of momenta, or derivatives, but I have to rewrite it in terms of the number of vertices and then the number of propagators for it to make sense as a field theory. So this is the combination that I get. And now, actually, I can combine it with the denominator, and I can look at the theory. And if I combine it with the denominator, the way it behaves is the number of derivatives to the power, or a derivative to the power 6 minus 6L minus m. And the 6 is very important here because I can cancel the 6 by putting 6 in the measure, which means that this is actually a marginal theory in 6 dimensions. So this is what I'm looking for. I'm looking for one theory which is marginal in 4 dimensions, and probably that's going to be Jang Mills. And I'm looking for another theory which is marginal in 6 dimensions. And this is just plain dimensional analysis. Okay, so let's look at marginal theories in 6 dimensions. So I write down all the dimension 6 operators I can imagine. It turns out that there's two independent ones which only involves f mu nu. So I have a candidate theory like this. And then this has to write 1 over k to the 4 propagator that I know is there in conformal gravity. And it's actually good that it's already here in the gauge theory, because otherwise it would not be in the gravity theory. So this has the right propagator, but if I only have this term, it turns out the S matrix is trivial. S matrix is just 0. So I need this term as well. That actually provides interactions. Well, some interactions come from this term, but I need at least one insertion of this operator, otherwise I get the non-trivial, otherwise I get the trivial S matrix. So I can compute, for example, my three-point amplitude. The three-point amplitude is coming from this term alone, so it's just f cubed, which we know has this form in the spinoricity notation. And then just now, before doing anything more, I can actually do the double copy, and this has been done previously, and I get something which looks like ij to the fourth power, and I can reinterpret that as being phi times r squared. So this is an r squared, thank you. This is an r squared operator, so it smells like the right thing, but you can already tell that this is going to be the minimal conformal supergravity because there's additional states here, phi. And also, if you try to look at trigger vector amplitude, this vanish. It's basically proportional to Gauss-Bonnet term. So it does not vanish in higher dimension, but it vanishes in 4 dimension. So I have my candidate theory, and now I can compute my four-point amplitude. And if I do that, I get this amplitude. And now I have to check whether this satisfies color kinematics duality or not. So I have to check using the BCA relations. So I plug it in this relation. This relation should be 0, but if I actually plug it in, I get this non-zero term here. So this doesn't look like the right theory. But I can massage this term a little bit, and I can massage it onto this form. I can say that I have a missing contribution on this form. Sorry, this delta has nothing to do with the delta before. This is a different delta. But I have this missing contribution, so somehow I should insert this in my amplitude. And you can actually interpret this, insert this amplitude as being a scalar coupling to F squared operator. And if you actually do dimensional analysis in six dimension, you realize that this is also a dimension six operator. So clearly my list of dimension six operators was not complete. So I add it to the list. So I add the kinetic term, I add this term, and it turns out in six dimension the scalar has dimension two, so I can also add a phi cubed term. So these are my list of operators now. Okay, so now I have a new candidate for my Lagrangian. And basically this part is trivial, but then I have this interaction here between a phi and two f's. And I cannot say that this is just proportional to FABC, because the interaction between the two f's is symmetric. So I need something symmetric here. So I just write down a general Clebsch-Gorlin coefficient. I don't actually know what representation the scalar is going to be in, and it turns out that if you assume this in an adjoint, it's not the right answer. You don't get the right answer. This is not in the adjoint. And likewise here, I have to write down something which is totally symmetric, because if I wrote down something anti-symmetric, it would vanish. So there's a symmetric Clebsch-Gorlin coefficient. And then what I have to do is, because I basically want to double copy this with Yang-Mills theory, and Yang-Mills theory only has FABC color factors. So I have to assume that this Clebsch-Gorlin coefficient has to reduce to FABCs, otherwise it won't work. So I assume that it reduces to this, and this, together with enforcing the BCA relation, implies that when I contract two of these alpha indices, I get this. And this looks very familiar. This almost looks like a Jacobian entity, except that if there was a minus sign here, then you would get FABC, FABC here. But this is a plus sign, because this is symmetric. So I have this relation. It turns out you need one more relation, and this relation you find when you go to 6 point. And that relation is when you contract a C tensor times a D tensor, this has to be expressible in terms of the generators. And in turn, the generators can be reduced to FABCs using identities which just comes from this being part of a Lie algebra. So I don't actually know what representation this scalar is in. I don't know what these tensors are, but I know how to reduce. Yeah. No, I want to have pure graviton scattering at 4 point, yeah. At 3 points, it vanishes, but the 4 point, yeah. Okay, so it turns out that these relations are sufficient to compute any trio level amplitude. And as I said, I don't actually know what the scalar representation it is in, but I don't care at this point. So now I can actually sit down and calculate. I can also show that color kinematic duality is satisfied up to 8 point just by brute force calculation. So there's no new Feynman vertices beyond 6 point. The 6 point is the last Feynman vertex. And now when I do the double copy, I can do that, for example, in the MHV sector. Then I land on this formula. And I land on this formula, and this formula is actually the formula by Berkowitz and Witten. And I land exactly on this formula, except for a minus sign. I didn't insist that I landed this formula. I just insisted that I had a theory which obeyed color kinematics duality, which had the right dimension, and I land exactly on this formula. So basically, and I should also say that this theory has all plus amplitudes, and that just comes from the fact that we have F cubed, and this means that this cannot be supersymmetrized. So the only side that we can supersymmetrize is the Yang-Mills side, pure Yang-Mills side. So we can get the conformal supergravities now as this double copy, this dimension six theory times n equals 1, 2, 4 super Yang-Mills. And in the last 1 minute, I should say that there's various generalizations that you can do. The very first thing you can do is actually add scalars. So you cannot get scalar by dimensional reduction, because if you actually do that, the scalars will decouple. But you can add scalars by hand. and you have to add this term like this. So you have to add bi-adjoint scalars, and you have a so, and there's a term here which says same Clebsch-Gordan coefficient, and this gives what we can call Maxwell wild gravities. And in fact, this interaction is completely fixed by color kinematics duality. And then furthermore, you can add a cubic interaction between the scalars themselves, a phi-cubed interaction. And this is not fixed, so that's a free parameter lambda here. And this gives the double copy is Yang-Mills Weil gravity. And this free coupling, this free lambda here is related to the coupling constant of the Yang-Mills theory. And if you do this for n equals 4, you land on Witten's twist string on the nose, implying that it has conformal gravity in the double trace sector and also in loops. Finally, you can deform it with a dimension 4 operator, which is basically the Yang-Mills Lagrangian. If you do that, you also have to add this term, otherwise color kinematics duality is not satisfied. And then you get what we can call Yang-Mills Einstein wild gravity. And it all works, and it all works for any value of this parameter m. And in fact, you can take m to infinity, and then you're back to Einstein gravity. Many more double copies can be constructed, some of questionable utility. So you can take this theory times n equals the nonlinear sigma model. I don't know what it is. That's an open question. And another thing, so you can compare to what you get from CHY, if you do Yang-Mills times nonlinear sigma model, then you get Born-Infeld. You can also do it with you can do the double copy itself, and then you get the sixth derivative gravity, which is basically derivative on r squared squared and then r cubed, and this cannot be supersymmetrized. And I'm more or less done, so I'm out of time. Thank you.
Other states, right? The ghost states.
Yeah.
And there's something confusing about their amplitudes because they're probably not they're not quite translationally invariant. They have derivatives of momentum conserving delta functions on them because the free solutions are like x e to the
yeah
APX,
exactly yeah APX, yeah so. Yeah. Yeah.
So have you thought about that and what do you do with the if you imagine double cupping, what do you imagine happens with the derivatives on delta functions?
So there's very similar states. So in this dimension 6 theory, there's very similar states because this is also four derivative interaction. So that's exactly precisely the same kind of states. That said, I don't actually understand what happens when you do the double copy. How does the states match up?
Oh, even at the level of states.
Yeah, because normally we say that well the asymptotic states double copy trivially, and you do it state by state, and it's all straightforward. Here is it's very non-trivial. I don't understand that. Even to make things worse, once I introduce this mass, you have some states which are massive, some states which are massless, and I just double copy it, you know, just a naive way, and somehow it all works. I don't know why. It's an open question. Yeah.
But in the massless case, just the kinematical part of matching up the states you haven't done, you don't know how that works.
I can only match up the ordinary gravitons, and the other states is really obscure how they actually line up. Yeah.
So is the gauge theory that we found here has some enhanced symmetry that makes you need that extra scalar in it?
Enhanced symmetry. Well, so it has an interesting property, which I state here. So what happens is if you dimensionally reduce this, the scalar decouples, which basically means that there's no epsilon dot epsilon terms in the amplitude. Whether that's connected to a symmetry, I don't know, but that seems plausible. Other than that, well, I guess it's classically conformal in 6th dimension, but given that it's not supersymmetric, it's not going to be that at loop level. So.
I also have another question. So when you do double copy, if I use 1 over p to a force instead and do double copy, what's wrong with that? Do you just don't get gauge invariance or?
Try that. I forget what goes wrong, but it's not so happy. I think it doesn't work so well. I have to remind myself why it doesn't work, but there's some reason that why this doesn't work. Yeah.